19-year-old Bryce Laspisa seemed to have everything together. He was attending Sierra College, was living with his best friend Sean, and was dating a beautiful young woman named Kim. According to everyone in his life, Bryce was extremely positive, put together, and making strides towards a bright future. Over the summer of 2013, he came home to Laguna Niguel in Southern California, where he and his parents had moved the year before, escaping the harsh winters of Illinois. It was a cultural change for sure, but Bryce seemed to be enjoying his new environment, and the pros of living in Southern California far outweighed any feelings of sadness from leaving the area he'd grown up in. In August, Bryce returned to Sierra College to prep for classes and settle in with Sean. It was a long drive away, just around 7 hours from home, and by all accounts, Bryce was your typical college student. He enjoyed the freedom of being out of the house, did a little partying, and indulged in the occasional adult beverage. Then, everything changed. On August 27th, Bryce begins acting strangely. He tells his girlfriend she would be better off without him. He tells his roommate that he can have his prized Xbox and a pair of diamond earrings gifted to him by his mother. According to both Kim and Sean, Bryce has been abusing alcohol at a disturbing level and has now begun using the ADHD medication Vyvanse recreationally. Sean places a call to Bryce's parents to tell them he's concerned. On the 28th, Bryce goes to Kim's apartment and ends the relationship officially. She calls his parents, telling them that he isn't behaving normally and she's afraid for him to drive. After speaking with Bryce, his mother instructs Kim to give him back his keys. He sounds lucid on the phone and plays it off that Kim won't return his keys because of the breakup. Bryce's mother is concerned and wants to come visit him to see what's going on, but he tells her not to and that he has a lot he has to tell her. She tells him to go home for the night and to call in the morning. It won't be until around 11 a.m. the following day, on August 29th, that Bryce's parents learn he never went home. Instead, he drove all night and wound up in Buttonwillow, California, close to the halfway point between Sierra College and Laguna Niguel. Bryce's bizarre behavior intensifies, and over the next 24 hours, he is evasive with his parents, sits for prolonged periods of time in desolate locations, and then alleges he's stopping to sleep, but is captured on surveillance footage just minutes later, entering the Castaic Lake recreational area. He's expected to be home by 3:25 a.m. on August 30th, but at 8 a.m., his parents are awakened by the California Highway Patrol, who have found his vehicle, flipped on its side, at the bottom of a steep embankment, but Bryce is nowhere to be found. What happened to Bryce Laspisa? Did he run off from some issues in his life and is now living as a transient? Could the accident have caused a head injury, which resulted in amnesia or a fugue state? Did alcohol and drug abuse lead to psychosis or possibly even suicide? Or was Bryce the victim of a random act of violence in the early morning hours? This is Trace Evidence, Episode 43, The Bizarre Disappearance of Bryce Laspisa. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. In today's episode, I examine the bizarre disappearance of Bryce Laspisa in August of 2013. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on unsolved murders and missing persons. Trace Evidence is available across all platforms and can be found on iTunes, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, YouTube, and many more. Further information, including full episodes, transcripts, merchandise, social media links, YouTube videos, and much more, can be found on the website at trace-evidence.com. Trace Evidence has a Patreon for those of you who wish to support the podcast. Patrons receive shoutouts, stickers, ad-free episodes, and special updates. This podcast is a complete one-man operation, so if you wish to help, please check out the Patreon page at patreon.com/traceevidence. Donations can also be made via PayPal for those of you who wish to help but don't want to use Patreon. There is a PayPal donation button on the website. If you'd like to contact me, you can email me at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter at traceevpod. That's TRACEEVPOD. Add me on Instagram at traceevidencepod, or join the Trace Evidence discussion group on Facebook simply by searching for Trace Evidence or clicking the direct link on the website. If you have questions, comments, or case suggestions, I'd love to hear from you. As a final note, if you enjoy the show, please rate and review it on whatever app or platform you're listening on. The more ratings and reviews the show gets, the easier it becomes to find the podcast, and the more attention can be given to the cases that I cover. I want to thank all of you for your patience this week. Hardware issues caused me to delay this episode, so thanks to all of you for your kindness and support. Today I look into the bizarre disappearance of Bryce LaSpisa. This is one of the more confusing cases I've ever addressed, and those familiar with it often refer to Bryce as the male version of Maura Murray. This is episode 43, The Bizarre Disappearance of Bryce LaSpisa. Bryce David LaSpisa was born on April 30th, 1994, to parents Karen and Michael LaSpisa. Bryce was raised in Naperville, Illinois, located in DuPage and Will counties. Naperville is a suburb of Chicago, located approximately 50 miles southwest of the Windy City. Naperville is the fifth largest city in Illinois, boasting a population of approximately 147,000 residents, and has been frequently ranked by USA Today and Business Insider as one of America's safest cities. Bryce was a handsome young man, with a brilliant shock of red hair that complemented his piercing green eyes, and from the moment of his birth, his parents were both completely smitten. From an early age, Bryce's ability to captivate a room was also apparent. Friends and family would describe him as the kind of person who could light up a room, the kind of child that always found a way to make those around him smile. This was a trait he would maintain and hone throughout his lifetime. Growing up in Naperville, Bryce was able to quickly develop a large circle of friends who were also captivated by his beaming personality and undeniably contagious smile. Bryce's father would later say, quote, "He is such a social guy. He had lots of friends and would hang out with them often. We would have them over to our house." End quote. Bryce's magnetism and charisma was not simply limited to his knack for making others feel good, but was an outgrowth of his deeply thoughtful mind and soul, and he would share his thoughts and dreams not only with his friends, but with his parents, with whom he had a remarkably close relationship. Karen would later say, quote, "He would talk to Mike and I about any subject, an open book. We always say that he gets that from his mom because I'm an open book, and it was always just very easy." End quote. Bryce was a highly intelligent young man who performed well in school, but above all else, was described as a happy person. He was always smiling and looking to cheer up others when their days were bad. He wasn't prone to silent contemplation or deeply pensive moments, but instead, addressed everything with his particular brand of optimism and positivity. While for many, the older they get and the further they progress in school, the wider the gap comes between themselves and their families, and moments of teenage angst aren't uncommon. For Bryce, though, these moments were few and far between, and often went by as unnoticed for how short-lived they were. To this day, those who knew Bryce recollect him as a beam of sunshine, and his family never felt that he held back or created any distance between them. During his childhood and throughout the rest of his life, Bryce was shown to have a gift for art. His sketches and drawings show incredible promise, and it's in the field of art that Bryce would eventually pursue a career. As he grew older, his interest in sports developed along with his frame, and as Bryce grew taller, peaking at 5'11", and thicker, weighing approximately 170 pounds, his athletic abilities became sharper and more defined. While attending Naperville Central High School, Bryce played football and recreational league baseball. His talent, be it on the gridiron, on the diamond, or on a sketch pad, was undeniable, and he excelled at everything that he put his mind towards. In 2012, Bryce would graduate from Naperville Central High School, but his college targets were somewhat up in the air. While he certainly had the interest in going to an institution of higher education, there was a move coming up. Michael and Karen were retiring shortly after Bryce's graduation, and the family would pack up and leave their home, heading out west. Ultimately, the La Spisa family settled in Laguna Niguel, California. Laguna Niguel is located in the southeast corner of Orange County, in the San Joaquin Hills. The city is bordered by Aliso Viejo, Dana Point, Laguna Beach, Laguna Hills, Mission Viejo, and San Juan Capistrano. The city is much different from what Bryce was used to, with the winters of Illinois becoming a dim memory, replaced with the sun, surf, and sand of Southern California. Laguna Niguel's population is less than half that of Naperville, sitting at approximately 65,000 residents. And for anyone who has ever traveled from the suburbs of a Midwest city in America to the hills and oceans of Southern California, the culture is as varied and different as can be imagined. For Bryce, though, this wasn't exactly a challenge. The charisma he'd carried with him his entire life played just as strongly in Southern California as it had in the suburbs of Chicago. Bryce registered for and was accepted into Sierra College, a community college, with its main campus being located in Rocklin, California, approximately 460 miles north of Laguna Niguel. It wasn't a short drive, with Sierra College being just over 7 hours away. And while Bryce's parents were excited about his prospects, this would limit the likelihood that their son would be coming home for weekend visits. This, though, was all part of the college experience, as they saw it. College was a place for Bryce to go out on his own, learn to take care of himself, to be responsible for his grades, his laundry, his food, and everything else. Bryce had always been a very responsible young man, and had steered clear of trouble, with his parents believing that they had succeeded in raising him to be the kind, dependable adult he was blossoming into. As is to be expected of a teenager on the crest of adulthood, Bryce did step outside the lines of what was considered acceptable behavior on occasion. According to his parents, he had experimented with alcohol in the past, though nothing for which they considered it a major issue. His father stated, quote, "He's a regular kid. I'm not saying Bryce is a saint, so I'm sure he did an average amount of what teenagers do. He did have a couple of incidents, but they weren't a magnitude enough for us to say there's a serious problem here." End quote. This kind of behavior isn't necessarily out of line with young adults who are having fun in high school and then proceeding on to college. College parties are notorious for having drugs and alcohol present, so for Bryce to have experimented isn't that shocking. One would imagine you'd be hard struck to find many college-level kids who weren't having the occasional drink or dalliance with an illegal drug. Regardless of those types of behaviors, there didn't appear to be any true negative impact on Bryce, his academics, or his personality. He remained the charming and polite young man he'd always been, and his outlook continued to be full of optimism and excitement. He was very much looking forward to college, to making new friends, and to carving out a future for himself. During his first term at Sierra College, he met and began dating a beautiful young woman named Kim. According to his parents, Kim was a sweet girl, and they got along very well. They weren't too sure about how serious the relationship was, but according to Karen, they knew the relationship was more than casual when the two changed their relationship statuses on Facebook and began sharing a lot of photos together. Karen would also say that, in her experience, Bryce treated Kim very well and was showing all indications that he was respectful, caring, and loving. Bryce's first year at Sierra College went off without a hitch. He had successfully completed his classes, pulling in good grades, and seemed to thoroughly enjoy the experience. Due to the distance between the college and his family's home in Laguna Niguel, Bryce had only come home for major holidays and breaks throughout the year. Now, he would be coming home to spend the summer with his parents, as well as his girlfriend who lived in Chico, California. According to Mike and Karen, all seemed well with their son. They noticed no changes in behavior, no changes in attitude, and if nothing else, Bryce seemed happy with his life and excited about the future. Throughout much of the summer, he had spoken about looking forward to his sophomore year and the possibilities that came with it. While he had done well previously, he had been a new man on campus, but going back was to assure he'd reconnect with friends he'd made and he'd likely make new ones as well, making the experience all the more immersive and exciting the second time around. All of this would change rather rapidly, though. Bryce returned to Sierra College for his sophomore year in August of 2013. Now 19 years old, he hopped in his beige 2003 Toyota Highlander SUV and made the nearly 500-mile drive. This semester, he would be rooming with his friend, Sean Dixon, and the two were very much looking forward to having a good time and enjoying the full college experience. According to reports of the time, Bryce returned to campus approximately 2 weeks before the start of classes. He was eager to connect with Sean, to set up the room, and to get settled in before the race of constant classes began. According to Karen, fairly quickly, she received phone calls from some of Bryce's friends, including his roommate Sean. These friends expressed concern for Bryce, stating that he was behaving out of character and bordering on what they considered abnormal or even dangerous behavior. According to Sean, Bryce had been drinking heavily. He later told investigators that Bryce was going through an entire bottle, or a fifth of alcohol, every weekend, which is no small amount. In addition to this, he did not tell Bryce's parents, but he did tell investigators that Bryce was reportedly using Vyvanse. Vyvanse is the brand name of lisdexamfetamine dimesylate and is often prescribed for those suffering from ADHD. ADHD medications such as Vyvanse and the more commonly used Adderall are often popular among college students, as it allows them to party hard, stay up late, and then get the boost of energy they need to make it through their days, increasing their focus in class and even aiding all-night studying and essay writing sessions. Vyvanse is a central nervous stimulant, and according to Sean, Bryce had been taking the pills in an effort to stay up later. It's been suggested that Bryce began taking the pills during an all-night session of playing Xbox, and for whatever reason, he continued doing so. Where he came into possession of the pills has never been clearly explained. Vyvanse is rather powerful and lists among its side effects a racing heart, decreased blood pressure, tremors, restlessness, hallucinations, unusual behavior, and motor tics. It's also specified in documentation for the medication that alcohol consumption should be avoided, as very serious side effects or interactions can occur. If indeed Bryce was taking Vyvanse and drinking to the large amount that has been described by his roommate, this could certainly go a long way to explain some of his unusual behavior, which will take place in the days and hours leading up to his disappearance. Some people who abuse Vyvanse do so by crushing the pills and snorting them, and this can lead to psychosis, as well as other major side effects, including death. Karen would also later report that Bryce's girlfriend, Kim, also found his behavior to be changing, and she was growing concerned, not only for the state of their relationship, but for his personal well-being as well. According to Karen, she called and spoke with Bryce during this time, and he assured her that everything was fine. According to both of his parents, they heard nothing in his speech that seemed to suggest he was under the influence of anything or acting out of the ordinary. In addition to this, he had just spent the entire summer at their home, and they'd seen no indication that he had any kind of substance abuse issues, either related to pills or alcohol. Many have suggested that this may be the result of their own naivete in relation to their son having problems, but as many have noted, children can be adept at concealing all kinds of substance abuse issues, especially if they haven't broadened out to the point where they're having a clear impact on personality and behavior. I know from my own personal experience that at a college age, I had several bottles of alcohol in my home, hidden in my bedroom, and my parents had no idea that I was drinking at night. So for the Laspisa family, it's frustrating to try and put their finger on what could have changed in the 2 weeks since he'd left home for college to result in this behavior. But it's entirely possible he was doing things while at home, perhaps not to the degree that he was when he returned to Sierra College, though. The combination of amphetamines and alcohol is certainly not a good one, as we saw from the list of side effects and the stern warnings on the label to avoid alcohol while on Vyvanse. In addition to this, there has never been anything to verify the dosage of Vyvanse that Bryce was taking. Since it was not prescribed by his own doctor, he may have been taking a dosage that was designated for someone who had been on it longer and had a higher tolerance. Vyvanse dosage begins at 10 milligrams and increases 10 milligrams for each subsequent level, all the way to 70 milligrams. It isn't outside of the realm of possibility to imagine Bryce could have been ingesting pills anywhere from 10 to 70 milligrams. And we also have no way of knowing exactly how many pills per day he was swallowing with his alcohol. Either way, the excessive drinking, in conjunction with the pills, certainly makes for a dangerous combination. On top of that, there are specific health issues one could be suffering from which can also increase the risk with Vyvanse, such as allergic reactions, heart disease, moderate to high blood pressure, overactive thyroid, anxiety, or a history of drug and alcohol abuse. It should be noted that specific medications, including some stimulants, have been known to bring out symptoms similar to bipolar disorder, as well as suicidal thoughts or tendencies, and schizophrenia. A comprehensive timeline helps display Bryce's activities and behavior in the days leading up to his bizarre changes and ultimately his disappearance. On Monday, August 26, 2013, Bryce attends his speech and web design classes and then speaks on the phone with his mother, who describes the conversation as normal. Later that day, they receive a photo of Bryce, looking happy, and posing with a Madden NFL Xbox game. On Tuesday, August 27th, Bryce's girlfriend Kim notes an oddness in his behavior and asks him if everything is all right. Allegedly, during this talk, Bryce admits to Kim that he's been taking Vyvanse. When Karen speaks of this later, she refers to the conversation and relays Kim's statement, saying, quote, "He was acting strange, and he admitted he took that pill," end quote. Sometime between Tuesday the 27th and Wednesday the 28th, Bryce and Kim exchange text messages, and his odd behavior continues. According to Kim, she asks Bryce if he wants to break up with her, and he sends a text message back telling her that she'd be better off without him. It's also during this time that his roommate, Sean, finds Bryce's behavior to be extremely out of character. According to Sean, at this time, Bryce gives him his Xbox, which he's reported to have loved, as well as a pair of diamond earrings, which his mother had given him. According to Karen, Bryce loved the earrings and cherished them, so this behavior, which they don't find out about until later, will raise red flags about Bryce's possible intentions. On Wednesday night, Bryce arrives at Kim's apartment in Chico, California, at approximately 10 p.m. According to Kim, Bryce continues behaving oddly, and the two discuss his behavior and the state of their relationship. Bryce reportedly breaks up with Kim, but she, concerned for his well-being, takes his car keys and refuses to give them back. At this point, she calls Bryce's parents and speaks to them, explaining that Bryce seems to be in bad condition and she doesn't think it's a good idea for him to be driving. Bryce first speaks to his father, who later says, quote, "He told both of us the same thing. He told me, 'I want my keys, I want to go home. I broke up with Kim, so she won't give me the keys. And I said, Bryce, are you okay? Yes, I'm fine, Dad," end quote. Karen also speaks to her son at this point and says, quote, "I said, Bryce, I'm worried. I said, let me come up there tomorrow. Let me fly up there tomorrow. And he says, Mom, no. Don't make any airline reservations until I talk to you, because I have a lot to talk to you about," end quote. At this point, Karen got back on the phone with Kim and told her to give Bryce his keys back, that he seemed all right and he wanted to go home. Bryce reportedly leaves the Chico apartment at approximately 11:30 p.m. According to Karen and Michael, as far as they knew, Bryce was going to be making the drive back to his apartment at this time. Karen has said that she spoke to Bryce again after the confrontation with Kim, during which time she told him to go home and call her the next day, and he agreed. Of course, Bryce had specified that he had a lot to talk to his mother about, but what the subject was, the Laspisa family would never find out, and that conversation would never take place. Over the next 24 hours, Bryce would embark on a mysterious journey, and when his parents and others spoke to him, he seemed either disinterested in discussing his plans or simply didn't know what his plans were. At approximately 1 a.m. on Thursday, August 29th, Karen missed a call from Bryce. When she woke up and found the missed call, she assumed it was from her son letting her know that he'd arrived back at his apartment. She wouldn't discover until later, during the investigation, that this phone call was made from Bryce's cell, but pings of his phone placed him hours away from his apartment, heading in the opposite direction. According to the official timeline, at approximately 9 a.m., Bryce makes a roadside assistance call. He's run out of gas and is located in Button Willow, California. Button Willow is located in Kern County and is 26 miles west of Bakersfield, with a slim population of only 1,500 residents. While Bakersfield has a much larger population, this area of California is dotted with smaller towns spread out with empty wilderness between them. I've driven through here before, and there are definitely some desolate-looking places and large gaps of vacancy in between. Why Bryce was in this location has never been fully understood. Karen and Michael received a call that morning at 11 a.m. from their insurance company, State Farm. This is the first time they're notified that Bryce used the roadside assistance, and they're told about the charge. Not understanding why Bryce would be in that location, his parents assume that he'd be gun driving home. Buttonwillow places him approximately halfway between Sierra College and the family home in Laguna Niguel, just 178 miles away. What is interesting to note is that, according to Google Maps, if Bryce had headed straight towards Buttonwillow from his ex-girlfriend's apartment in Chico, the total driving time is only approximately 5 hours and 43 minutes. However, he doesn't place the call to roadside assistance until 9 a.m., meaning that nearly double that time, 9.5 hours, have passed. What Bryce was doing for all that time, where he was going, or what his intentions were, remain unknown. I do want to specify, there is some confusion about the roadside assistance point here. According to multiple sources, Bryce placed his roadside assistance call at 9 a.m., but no one arrived with gas until 12 p.m. Other reports suggest that the call was placed earlier, and that at 9 a.m., Bryce was given gas. This second explanation seems to be most prominent and fits the timeline more accurately, and therefore it is the account that I will be using. Being that Bryce had already received the gas he needed, Karen couldn't understand why he hadn't called and why he wasn't answering his phone. Bryce reportedly received 3 gallons of gas, for which he paid $20 using his credit card. The gas is delivered by a roadside assistance serviceman named Christian, who worked locally at Castro Tire and Truck. Another note is that, were Bryce planning to head home, he would have arrived home around 12 p.m. if indeed he'd left Buttonwillow after filling up. But when 12 came and went, without Bryce's arrival and no contact, Karen's concern continues to grow. At this point, she places a call to her insurance company, asking to be put in contact with the roadside assistance serviceman who helped Bryce earlier. Christian spoke with Karen and explained that he dropped gas off to Bryce hours earlier. When asked about whether or not Bryce was doing all right, Christian responded that he seemed okay to him. Karen explains that she's tried to call her son several times, but he isn't answering. Christian volunteers to head over to the spot where he found him earlier that morning, but Karen tells him not to worry. It's unlikely that he hasn't moved in the past 3 hours, and she speculates that Bryce may not have called or may not be answering because he's driving and may be out of service. Despite her objection, Christian tells her he's going to check regardless. To his surprise, when he arrives at the location in Buttonwillow, he finds Bryce sitting in the exact same spot that he was sitting in hours earlier. At this point, Christian calls Karen and explains that Bryce hasn't been moving. He also allegedly says, quote, "his eyes look a little red," end quote. At this point, Karen requests that Christian put Bryce on the phone. According to Karen, she's upset with Bryce at this time and asks him what he's doing. Bryce reportedly tells his mother that he's doing nothing. She asks him why he's been sitting in this location, but he doesn't appear to have any kind of answer that satisfies her. Karen instructs Bryce to just come home, later saying, quote, "I just said, 'What are you doing?' He just said, 'Nothing.' And I'm just, 'Bryce, you're 3 hours away. You just need to get gas. You're 3 hours from home.'" End quote. Bryce agrees, saying that he will arrive home around 3 p.m. At this point, Karen and Michael have no reason to doubt he's going to be home that afternoon, and, feeling better that they've spoken with him, they go about their days. They plan to ask him some serious questions when he arrives, but 3 o'clock comes and goes with no Bryce. At approximately 3:30, Karen calls Bryce, but receives no answer, She calls again, multiple times, but Bryce fails to pick up. Thinking that he may have taken a detour, gotten sidetracked, or hit Labor Day traffic or maybe stopped for food, they wait longer. But when 6 p.m. arrives, and Bryce is now 3 hours late, they call and file a missing persons report with the Orange County Sheriff's Department. The first step taken by the Sheriff's Department is to contact AT&T, the provider of Bryce's cell phone, in hopes of pinging his current location. The Sheriff's Department is granted an emergency ping and learn of Bryce's location. At approximately 9 p.m., authorities call the Las Pisas to inform them of where their son is, and Karen and Michael are shocked. According to the ping, Bryce is still in the town of Button Willow, and in the past 9 hours, he has moved no more than 8 miles from where he had been previously parked. Karen and Michael, at this point, don't know what to think, and they can't wrap their head around why Bryce would be sitting in this town for, at this point, at least 12 hours. Karen later stated, quote, "I can't account for 9 hours of what Bryce did or where he was, except that he's only 8 miles away from where he was when his car was serviced for gas," end quote. Not long after this call is placed, deputies from the Kern County Sheriff's Department arrive on the scene and find Bryce's vehicle. Official transcripts and dispatches from that night state that sheriff's deputies located Bryce near a hotel at Highway 58 and Freeway 5, or the I-5, in the 25,200 block of San Michel. The dispatch reports that the time was 9:33 p.m., and goes on to say that Deputy Hernandez spoke with Bryce, advised him to call home, and that there was nothing wrong when he arrived. He lists pings from AT&T, which reported Bryce being in the same location over the course of several hours. According to their report, Bryce is parked not far from the entrance to the interstate on Lagoon Drive in Button Willow, merely sitting in his vehicle on the side of the road. Feeling that something is wrong and that Bryce isn't behaving in a normal manner, officers instruct him to exit his vehicle. At this point, Bryce is given a field sobriety test, but according to the officers, he passes. They ask him if there's any drugs or alcohol in the vehicle, and he says no. When asked if they may search his vehicle, Bryce agrees, and officers go through his Toyota Highlander. To their surprise, they find nothing suspicious, illegal, or out of the ordinary. The deputies feel that Bryce is fine. He passed their sobriety test. There are no drugs or alcohol present, and he appears lucid. He's answering their questions, his responses are normal, he's able to hold a conversation, and doesn't appear to be disoriented or under the influence of anything. When asked what he's doing at the location and why he hasn't gone home, Bryce reportedly answers that he's simply relaxing and letting off a little steam. Considering his demeanor, the long drive from Sierra College, and the fact that Bryce doesn't appear to be under any duress, they have no reason to question this explanation. The officers inform Bryce that his parents have filed a missing persons report on him and that they're greatly concerned. Strangely, when they instruct Bryce to call home, he doesn't want to and appears hesitant. Why Bryce didn't want to call home, no one knows. It's been speculated that he may have been sitting in the same spot for so long because he didn't want to go home and face his parents, but no one can really know for sure. After seeing his resistance to making the phone call, sheriff's deputies actually dialed his mother's phone number and called themselves. Karen's first question to the deputy is whether or not he believes Bryce is all right to continue driving. Karen later says, quote, "I said to the officer, is he okay? And he says to me, yes, ma'am, he is," end quote. At this point, the officer puts the phone in Bryce's hand and tells him to talk to his mother. Though she's frustrated, upset, and confused, Karen doesn't want to say anything that might upset Bryce or cause him to delay his return home. She wants him to get home as fast as possible, and then, when she has him there and she knows he is safe, she has some strong questions she wants to ask. However, at this time, as Karen later stated, quote, "I said, Bryce, what are you doing? He said, Mom, I'm putting stuff back in my car because they searched my car. And I'm like, Bryce, what are you doing? You've been in the same area for 8 or 9 hours. I said, you need to get something to eat, and now you're going to be traveling in the dark, and now I'm kind of worried." End quote. In other statements made by Karen, she's also suggested that Bryce made mention of meeting up with friends later as a possible explanation for spending so much time in Button Willow. Who these friends were, and why he'd have to wait in his car for over 12 hours, remains a mystery. Much like Bryce's actions prior to, and in the hours following his interactions with sheriff's deputies, no one has yet been able to determine a reason behind it all. Bryce agrees to make his way home, and the deputies, at this point, go on their way, feeling that everything is fine. Approximately an hour later, sometime between 10 p.m. and 11 p.m., Christian, the serviceman who had brought the gas to Bryce, notices that he has a missed call from Bryce's mom from earlier in the day. He decides to call her back, checking if there's anything wrong and to see whether or not Bryce has made it home. Karen explains that Bryce had sat in Button Willow for almost the entire day. She tells him about the deputies speaking to him and how concerned they are for his safe return. At this point, Christian tells her he can, once again, return to the area and make sure everything is okay. Karen explains that Bryce has told her he's on the way home and that she's spoken with him. She goes on to say that it's unlikely that Bryce is still in the area, but Christian says he'll check just to make sure. Christian arrives at the location where police had previously spoken to Bryce and finds him, still, sitting in his Toyota Highlander. Christian calls Karen back within 15 minutes of their initial call and explains that Bryce still hasn't moved. Bryce has now been sitting in Button Willow for at least 13 hours. Christian, at this point, tells Bryce to begin driving and that he's going to follow him onto I-5 South. The I-5 runs from Mexico well up into Canada and is the main interstate that Bryce would use to make his trip south towards Laguna Niguel. Bryce speaks to Karen at this point, by Christian's insistence, and Karen tells him to drive safely and to keep his cell phone on so that they can keep in touch with him. They also do this so that they may be able to have his phone pinged to acquire his location should he, again, fail to arrive home in time. Christian follows Bryce, who gets on the I-5 heading south. At this point, Christian continues for 10 miles before pulling off the interstate and calling Karen. He explains that Bryce is now moving along the I-5 and that he seems to be driving well and is heading in her direction. Karen is grateful to Christian and thanks him for his concern and his efforts. At approximately 12:30 a.m., Bryce stops for gas and purchases a soft drink. Karen attempts to call Bryce at 12:50 but receives no answer. At approximately 1:50 a.m. on Friday, August 30th, Karen gets in touch with Bryce again. Karen and Michael are concerned and want to know where he is, but Bryce is evasive in his responses. He explains that he had been on the I-5, then had taken a detour, and now was back on the I-5. Michael gets on the phone with his son and asks him to describe landmarks, but Bryce says it's too dark to see any. Michael asks for Bryce to tell him what signs he's passing, but Bryce states there are no signs, or that he simply can't see the signs. It's not exactly clear. Either way, it seems apparent that Bryce is avoiding giving out information about his exact location. He does, though, explain that his GPS suggests he will arrive home at 3:25 a.m. The last contact between Bryce and his parents takes place at 2:09 a.m. Bryce calls home and speaks to Karen. According to her, he explains that he's feeling really tired and is planning to pull off the road to sleep in his car for a while before continuing home. His parents feel this is a good idea, considering he's been awake for somewhere between 24 and 30 hours, and they think that getting some rest might help clear his head and assure that he arrives home safely. They're concerned about him driving while tired, and so they tell him to find a safe place to park for a few hours. He tells them that he's pulling off the I-5 and is parking in a residential area. This is the last time Karen and Michael Laspisa will ever speak to their son. Around 8 a.m. that morning, Mike and Karen hear the sound of the doorbell. Assuming it's Bryce, having finally arrived home, they race to the door. To their surprise, they don't find Bryce waiting for them and are instead confronted by an officer of the California Highway Patrol. The officer asks if they're the owners of a 2003 beige Toyota Highlander, Bryce's SUV. When they confirm that the vehicle is their son's, the officer informs them that the vehicle was found abandoned that morning in the Castaic Lake area. According to the officer, the vehicle was found on Main Ramp Road, an access road leading to the Castaic Lake recreational area, which parallels to Lake Hughes Road, which leads up the hill towards a cell tower. The crash site location was approximately a two-hour drive north of Laguna Niguel. The vehicle was located at 5:30 a.m. The officer goes on to further state that not only was Bryce not found at the location of his vehicle, but that the vehicle itself was not merely abandoned. It had crashed and was found lying on its side at the bottom of a 25-foot embankment at the base of a steep hill. Upon inspection of the vehicle, authorities find Bryce's laptop, wallet, and cell phone inside. They also find small drops of Bryce's blood, one on the passenger seat headrest and another in the back seat, which they believe indicates a minor injury, but nothing that would have stopped him from walking away from the crash. On the other hand, it's a miracle he wasn't more severely injured, but they cannot help but wonder if he would have sustained internal injuries. The rear window of the SUV was smashed out, and investigators believe that it had been broken out from the inside and not during the crash itself. And for them, they begin to theorize that this may have been how Bryce exited the vehicle following the crash. Near the broken back window, they also discover a duffel bag, which is unzipped. This prompts investigators to wonder if Bryce may have gone through the bag following the crash and have taken something with him. The questions are endless, though. Why was Bryce in this area? How did he manage to crash his car? If indeed he was the one driving at the time, where did he go, and why did he leave his belongings behind? While looking over the crash scene, investigators begin to piece the moments leading up to the accident together. Since the SUV is located at the bottom of the embankment, they go to the top. There's a cell phone tower at the top, and investigators note tire marks, which lead from the tower down the hill to the point where the SUV was found flipped. Inspection of the tire tracks shows that larger-sized rocks have been kicked up, and there's evidence that, while going down the embankment, the driver was pressing the accelerator and speeding up, rather than hitting the brakes to slow down. The embankment leads down to Castaic Lake, and for investigators, they believe that Bryce may have made the choice to drive his SUV into the lake, but had flipped before he made it. Suicide becomes a theory, and when it's factored in with his odd behavior in the days and hours leading up to his disappearance, it's one which can be hard to deny. Due to the proximity to the lake, the condition of the vehicle, and reports of Bryce's behavior, investigators call in search teams. Divers are sent into the lake to look for any signs of Bryce. There are officers on foot, on horseback, and on four-wheelers, combing over the mountainous area, looking for any indication that Bryce may still be around. Helicopters survey the scene, and bloodhounds are brought in, along with cadaver dogs. Utilizing socks and shoes that Bryce had left behind at his ex-girlfriend's apartment, they begin tracking his scent. which leads down Lake Hughes Road near a gas station and truck stop, and then the scent simply stops, which makes investigators wonder if Bryce may have hitched a ride with someone. There are also reports that a team of dogs had tracked Bryce's scent down to the edge of the lake. Despite exhaustive search efforts in the area, including a radius of 11 miles, nothing is found to suggest that Bryce is still there. Divers spent 4 days in Castaic Lake, but ultimately were unable to discover anything. For investigators, it was baffling. They couldn't decide if Bryce had accidentally, in a half-asleep state, crashed his car, or if he'd done so on purpose. In addition to this, they begin to speculate whether or not he may have suffered a head injury, which impacted his decision-making or could possibly have caused amnesia. There is a surveillance camera, which photographs the license plates of all vehicles heading up the hill along Lake Hughes Road. In the course of their investigation, authorities reviewed the footage and made an odd discovery. According to still photos taken by that camera, Bryce made his ascent up Lake Hughes Road for the first time at 2:15 a.m., just 6 minutes after he'd spoken with his mother and said he was pulling over in a residential area to sleep. But the Castaic Lake region is far from a residential area. His vehicle shows up on the camera again at 4:29 a.m., an hour before the crash site is discovered. His vehicle is not seen coming down Lake Hughes Road, which seems to indicate that he went up at 2:15 and then followed the road for a long way until it spit him back out onto a main road, at which time he doubled back and went up the road again. What Bryce was doing in the area and why he went up a second time adds another confusing detail to what is already a confounding disappearance. As a result of their inability to locate anything related to Bryce, his case fell into the hands of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department's Homicide Bureau. Sergeant Roger Wallace, when asked about the search, suggested that they had done a very exhaustive search, with the assistance of the Santa Clarita Valley Search and Rescue Team, but had failed to come up with anything which might answer their questions. Bryce's parents were not apt to sit idly by and watch, and almost immediately turned to social media, making posts on Facebook and Twitter. Within hours, they had a number of volunteers who wanted to help with the search, as well as putting up flyers and spreading the word about Bryce's disappearance. Karen later stated, quote, "Through all the social media, it has been overwhelming. I've been on Facebook. I was inundated with emails from people. People are spreading the flyers and trying to help." End quote. Investigators began speaking to people close to Bryce, though outside of drug use, alcohol use, and his recent odd behaviors, there was little to be gleaned from them. Bryce's roommate explained that he had given him his Xbox and earrings, though he claims to have no understanding as to why. In addition to this, Sean revealed that, on the night Bryce vanished, he received a text from him. The text read, quote, "I love you, bro. Seriously. You're the best person I've ever met. You saved my soul." End quote. The search for Bryce continued throughout the weekend, but by the following week, efforts had been reduced, and Bryce's case was changed from an emergency search to a more casual search, feeling that there was no likelihood that they were going to discover anything new at Castaic Lake. This would be the first act which would create a rift between the Laspisa family and the investigators working the case. While Karen and Michael felt that Bryce's case wasn't being addressed as thoroughly as they would have liked, investigators felt they had little to go on and if, in fact, Bryce had walked away from the accident, they had nothing to give them a direction to go in. On Wednesday, September 4th, 5 days after Bryce vanished, police responded to a fire burning in the area of Castaic Lake, near to where Bryce's vehicle had been recovered. Once on the scene, they found the body of a deceased male had been set on fire. For days following the discovery, the Laspisa family waited with bated breath, but the decedent was ultimately identified as a man from Los Angeles, and not Bryce LaSpisa. Authorities began to lean towards the possibility that Bryce had chosen to run off from something in his life. They felt that whatever it was he was referring to when he told his mother that they had a lot to talk about could go a long way towards solving the mystery of where he went and why. At the same time, his family finds it difficult to accept that Bryce would have left of his own volition, and in their frustration with police, they hire a private investigator who begins digging into the case. It's a difficult job, a case with a lot of dead ends and no real answers. For police, there are several factors that indicate to them that Bryce ran off. Something was obviously troubling him. He was killing time, delaying his arrival home. Button Willow, where he spent a large portion of the day, has a lot of trucker activity, and it's theorized that Bryce may have been looking to hop on board and be driven elsewhere. The fact that he gave away his Xbox and earrings also leads them to believe that, whatever happened to Bryce, it was part of a plan that he was choosing to execute. Bryce's parents feel that he was far too close to them, and that he had such a good relationship with them that he wouldn't have been willing to walk away and leave them wondering if he was all right. They don't believe that their son would put them through the incredible pain of wondering where he is and what happened to him if he had the ability to do something about it. Bryce's uncle, Glenn David, when asked about Bryce possibly leaving, acknowledged this possibility and addressed his nephew directly, stating, quote, "Bryce, it's your Uncle Glenn. Come on, let's go. Make a call. Have somebody make contact. Whatever it is, we'll work through it." End quote. Despite flyers, billboards, media attention, and social media alerts, no one comes forward with information about Bryce, his possible whereabouts, or what may have happened to the 19-year-old. For police, it's frustrating. For his family, it's absolutely devastating. Soon, the days become weeks, the weeks become months, and the months become years. For the LaSpisa family, every day is as heart-wrenching as the next, as they wonder what could have happened to their son. The bizarre circumstances of his last known days and hours continue to weigh heavily on the minds of both his family and investigators. Sadly, though, there's very little to report about Bryce following the first few weeks after his disappearance. The private investigator, hired by the family, ultimately decided that Bryce likely sustained a head injury in the crash, which resulted in some form of retrograde amnesia or possibly a fugue state, which left him confused, disoriented, or not knowing who he was. After a few years of having the investigator look into the case, the LaSpisas ultimately stop using her services, as it appears that whatever happened to Bryce simply cannot be uncovered with the information available at this time. Bryce's parents took part in several candlelight vigils in hopes of garnering attention to his case and bringing someone forward with information, though no new information has ever come to the surface. Over the years, they have elected instead to try and spread awareness of his case through random acts of kindness they hoped would be done in his name. When asked about the possibility of a memorial or another candlelight vigil, Karen LaSpisa responded, quote, "It has become too difficult to hold these, especially for me. You would think with time, as his mom, I could do an observance, but my pain is still as raw as it was the day he disappeared." End quote. In August of 2015, 2 years after their son vanished, the LaSpisa family hired a sonar specialist to check Castaic Lake, as thoroughly as possible, for his body. After using sonar, nothing was discovered which suggested that any body was in the depths of the lake, which goes as deep as 300 feet in some locations. If indeed Bryce LaSpisa is still out there somewhere, he is living a transient existence, for there has been no activity on his social security number, bank accounts, credit cards, or passport. For all intents and purposes, beyond comprehension, Bryce appears to have mysteriously vanished into the darkness of Castaic Lakes region and has yet to be seen again. Since Bryce vanished in August of 2013, nearly 5 years ago, there have been multiple sightings reported, though none of them could be verified. Oftentimes, homeless men in California as reported as resembling Bryce, but when the individual is located, it's never Bryce, or the individual fails to be located in the first place. Sightings of Bryce are not only limited to California, with individuals from across the country calling in sightings. He's been seen everywhere from California to Oregon to Texas, in every form and fashion, from a homeless man asking for change outside an In-N-Out burger to a young man with dreadlocks spending time on the beach. The most recent of these sightings was discussed on the Facebook page Find Bryce Laspisa. In the post, there is a discussion of a homeless man with red hair seen in some tents behind a CVS drugstore. Thousands of tips and sightings have been reported, though none have ever led to Bryce Laspisa. With Bryce's disappearance coming following such bizarre circumstances, many theories have been developed to address what are considered to be the most likely possibilities. Some of these theories have been put forth by investigators, others from the family, and some still from online investigators. The first theory is that Bryce Laspisa elected to run away from his life and his family. Supporters of this theory believe that the car accident was done purposefully with the intent of ending up in the lake, but when this failed to happen, many believe Bryce walked away from the accident and from his life. For many, there's a high likelihood that Bryce is still alive out there, somewhere, choosing not to return. Others have a different spin on this and suggest that Bryce's choice to run off may have been related to the onset of a mental illness or as a result of side effects of the drug Vyvanse, which he had been abusing. The second theory suggests that Bryce may have been suicidal the night he vanished, and that his ultimate plan was to crash his SUV into the lake to drown. When he failed to do so, many believe he may have wandered off into the wilderness with the intent of committing suicide. Whether this was the result of some recent difficulties in his life, the influence of drugs and alcohol, or some other yet unknown details, is hotly debated. The third theory follows the thought process presented by the Laspisa's private investigator, that Bryce's disappearance may in fact be related to the crash itself. According to this theory, Bryce may have been disoriented that night due to a lack of sleep or the residual effects of coming down from drug use. The accident, whether on purpose or purely accidental, may have caused a head injury, which resulted in a case of retrograde amnesia or possibly a fugue state, which left Bryce confused and unsure of his own identity, where he was, or what he was doing. For many, they believe Bryce's disappearance came when he wandered off in this state and that he is now living as a homeless person without any recollection of his past or even the knowledge that he's a missing person. The fourth and final theory is that following the crash, Bryce may have hitched a ride with a trucker or another person, and he may have been murdered in a random act of violence by someone with whom he interacted in the early morning hours of August 30th, 2013. Supporters of this theory note Bryce's closeness to his family and the likelihood that were he still alive out there somewhere and in possession of his full mental faculties, he would have gotten in contact by now. Being on foot in the early morning hours, the chances of him running into someone who meant to do him harm are difficult to silence. 19-year-old Bryce Laspisa's final hours are incredibly difficult to understand. In the last days of his life, friends and his girlfriend noted a drastic shift in his personality, odd behaviors, and were worried about his well-being. Regardless of their concerns, Bryce's family feels that he was lucid and normal in their conversations with him, while law enforcement who interacted with him just hours before he vanished saw nothing in his behavior which led them to believe that he was in any way at risk or under duress. What led this intelligent, caring, and popular young man to crash his vehicle in the hills of Castaic Lake, at which point he seemingly vanished into nothingness? When last seen, Bryce Laspisa was described as being a Caucasian male with red hair and green eyes. He stands 5 feet 11 inches tall and weighs approximately 170 pounds, though his weight may be different if he is living as a homeless person. Bryce has a tattoo of a Taurus bull's head and his birthday in Roman numerals on his upper left arm, and both of his ears are pierced. When last seen, Bryce was wearing a blue and white checkered shirt, white cargo shorts, and size 12 red and white Nike shoes. A $5,000 reward for information leading to Bryce's recovery remains in place today. For his family, every day is a struggle. They wake up, go about their routines, and try to live their lives, but they're haunted by the questions which can't be answered. What happened to their son? What was it that he wanted to talk to them about, and was it in some way connected to his disappearance? For them, they cannot begin to grasp what could have transpired in the 2 weeks following his summer vacation and then his disappearance. For them, the last time they saw Bryce, he was the same optimistic, hopeful, and caring son they'd always known. What they do believe is that Bryce is alive out there somewhere, and he needs their help as desperately as they need for him to come home. In the nearly 5 years that have passed, they have never given up hope that he will return someday, though every time a young male body is discovered, or a red-haired homeless man is spotted, their breath catches in their chests as they wait for verification, and so far, it has never been proven to be Bryce. When asked about what she believes may have happened, Karen Laspisa responded, quote, "He never ran away from home. There was never any problem big enough that would make Bryce literally want to walk away from his life. He loved us too much, and we love him too."
Hey, how are you? Let me ask you this. Do you like your stories to be extraordinary? If you do, then welcome to Extraordinary Stories Podcast. Do you like true crime? The details, the emotion, the facts, the real voices of people? Extraordinary Stories Podcast is a place to hear stories of death, love, sex, murder, the unbelievable, the insane, the weird, the wonderful. If you want to think, laugh, cry, and scream, then get into Extraordinary Stories Podcast. It's a place to have real feelings. And just a final warning. The stories are told in a thick Scottish accent. Extraordinary Stories Podcast.
The disappearance of Bryce Laspisa is one of those cases that's so utterly bizarre, it's hard to wrap your head around. A bright young man, heralded by everyone in his life as a smart, optimistic, kind, caring, and fun-to-be-around person, over the course of a 2-week period, seems to spiral into a dark place, begins abusing drugs and alcohol, and winds up spending a large sum of time driving around, sitting in random places, and ultimately, vanishing into a desolate area in the early morning hours. Bryce's case has been discussed since nearly the day he vanished, and for most of those who examine it, they can't help but be confounded by the details and incredibly confused by the evidence, what little there is. For his family, it's a waking nightmare. The idea that your child can leave home, seemingly fine, and then suddenly and without warning, fall into a darkness from which he cannot escape. In this particular case, you'll notice a great deal of detail leading up to the disappearance and very little following it. That's because outside of numerous unverifiable sightings and speculations on all sides of the equation, there's very little to discuss. There's a rift between the Lespises and the police, with the family feeling that authorities determined that Bryce left of his own volition, and in not so many words, they've implied that the police abandoned this case. On the side of law enforcement, they do believe that Bryce left of his own choice, but they disagree that they've abandoned the case. They simply felt that they had no new leads, no information, and nothing to follow. While they do follow up on reported sightings, they've never found anything which leads them to believe that anyone has actually seen Bryce. They continue to monitor his personal information and are in possession of his fingerprints, DNA, and dental records, which are used whenever a John Doe body is found, but over these past 5 years, they've never found anything concrete that leads them to Bryce. When you're dealing with something like this, with very little information and completely out of the ordinary behavior, you're going to have a decent amount of theories. There certainly are four major theories revolving around Bryce, each of which possesses its own evidence and each of which contradicts the others. Bryce's disappearance reminds me strongly of the Rico Harris disappearance, which I covered in episode 4. Two young men, with some drug abuse involved, who vanished from rural areas in California. Both of them were on long drives, both had people waiting for them to arrive, and both made phone calls indicating their location and that they were stopping to sleep. Though there doesn't appear to be a connection here, the similarities are certainly fascinating. Both stories are remarkably sad, and for both families, they've yet to find answers. The first theory in the disappearance of Bryce Lespisa is that Bryce chose to leave of his own choice. While this is a theory which is often examined in cases where people over the age of 18 disappear, for the most part, I find them to be unlikely. In Bryce's case, this may be more of a likely scenario than usual, but there are several factors which have to be considered. First and foremost is drug and alcohol abuse. We've never gotten a clear picture of who Bryce received the Vyvanse from, as he had no prescription that we know of. ADHD drugs are not a rarity on college campuses, so the source could have been anyone, but I do find it fascinating that while his roommate and girlfriend were concerned about his use, no particular individual was named as the source. Dabbling in prescription drugs without a prescription is dangerous, to say the least. We don't know what dosage Bryce was taking, but were he to have gotten these pills from his own physician, it's likely he'd have begun on a lower dose. Vyvanse is, essentially, methamphetamine, and the impact it can have on the body, as well as the mind, when taken improperly, can be very damaging. When you combine that with alcohol, you've got a recipe for disaster. The question that comes up in my mind is what led Bryce to start taking the pills in the first place? The story's been told that he took the pills to stay up while playing Xbox with friends, but that doesn't really make a lot of sense. It's possible, but if that was the plan, why did he continue taking them? Maybe he liked the way they made him feel, or maybe he was told by a friend about how great the pills were. Anything down this road is speculative, but for someone to do such a quick turn into drugs and alcohol seems to suggest that there may have been something going on in Bryce's life that those closest to him did not know. We could speculate endlessly about it and what it was that he wanted to discuss with his parents, but ultimately we have no way of knowing. For the running off by his own choice theory, we have to wonder if this is what happened. If the choice was made of sound mind, or if it was as the result of possible side effects of the drugs. Police believe it was a choice Bryce made, and they point to his giving away of his Xbox and earrings, breaking up with his girlfriend, and having a secret to share with his parents, and seemingly delaying his arrival home, as if he wanted to go elsewhere, as indicators that he was having issues he wanted to escape from. I've always felt that the giving away of those items might be more indicative of paying off a debt, as they are items which can carry a street value and are easy to sell, rather than indicators that he was planning to run off. But that's purely speculative on my part. Here's something that's never made sense to me. If you're planning to run away, wouldn't you want things that carry value, be them sentimental or something you could exchange for cash? Bryce left behind his wallet, laptop, cell phone, and the vehicle, even though he flipped it. Why would you want to run away without transportation? Perhaps he didn't want to be easily tracked, and that could explain leaving the cell phone behind, but why not take his wallet and laptop? The laptop could have, at least, garnered him some traveling cash to ensure he had food for a while. It's very confusing, but again, we don't know what state of mind he was in. While law enforcement who spoke to him that night found him to be lucid, that doesn't mean he wasn't hiding something or simply putting on a show for them. The area he was hanging around is also bizarre. While he suggested at some point that he might be meeting up with friends, there's never been anything found to indicate that he knew anyone in Button Willow. It's not exactly a heavily populated location with a lot of options, though it is interesting to note that he was hanging out in the area of a truck stop. Could his plan have been to run off with a truck driver and get across country quickly? Maybe. Though why do that when he could have simply driven himself further away and then ditched his vehicle? It does seem like some of these acts were done in order to avoid being tracked, but we also have no way of knowing if the accident was an accident or if it was done on purpose. Were Bryce of sound mind, you'd have to imagine that, were he planning to run off, he may have said something to someone so that those who loved him wouldn't worry about his safety. Maybe leave a note, something to indicate that while he was leaving, he was all right. Then again, I've seen many cases where someone simply chooses to run off and gives no indication that they're going to do it. Unfortunately, when it comes to this case and this theory, we have very little to work with. There is the possibility that Bryce was under the influence of drugs, was suffering from side effects, or that the drugs may have resulted in the surfacing of a latent mental illness. And all of these could have played roles in his choice to leave. We simply have no way of narrowing it down or knowing for certain. Bryce's behaviors could be symptomatic of drug abuse, but they could also suggest a mental disorder such as bipolar or schizophrenia. If indeed one of these illnesses had surfaced, it would go a long way towards explaining his odd and unpredictable behavior. The possibility that Bryce fled of his own volition is certainly there, and while the family disagrees, it cannot be completely ruled out. The second theory is that Bryce may have been suicidal and that the vehicle crashing was a result of him attempting to drive into the lake with the plan of killing himself. The fact that the tire mark suggested that he was pressing the accelerator and not the brake has been noted as a support for this possibility. It's certainly odd that he wouldn't have been braking as he careened down a steep embankment over brush, rocks, and across dirt and sand. Does this necessarily mean that he was intending to get into the lake? Not really. We have no way of knowing if Bryce had familiarity with the area, but if he didn't, in the darkness, he may not have even been able to have seen the lake. He drove off Lake Hughes Road to where a cell tower stood, and then drove down the embankment, where his vehicle ultimately flipped on a different road. Wouldn't it have been easier to have gotten on that first road and then drove down towards the lake instead of going down that embankment if that was his intention? We don't know what led him to this location in the first place, and while I understand that authorities consider suicide a possibility, weren't there easier ways for him to accomplish this? If Bryce had wanted to end his life, why not do it in a way that was guaranteed to succeed? There are multiple ways he could have accomplished this goal without needing to stay awake for more than 24 hours, driving all over California. He sat in Button Willow for over 13 hours, and during that time he could have easily found a way to end his life if he'd wanted to. Some have speculated that he spent his time considering the possibility, while others feel that Bryce was simply lost and trying to find himself. We have no way of knowing, But going back to the accident, assuming he survived the crash without a major injury and he was still suicidal, where would he have gone from there? Tracking dogs indicated that he may have headed toward the lake. They also indicated that he may have gone back down the road towards the gas station and truck stop. Had he gone to the lake, it's hard to imagine that divers wouldn't have found him. They were in the water just hours after his car crash, but at the same time, Castaic Lake is rather large, covering 320,000 acres. That's a lot of area to cover, and we've seen in the past that a body of water can be searched multiple times before anything is actually found, if ever. For many, they believe that Bryce went to the lake that night and simply has never been recovered. This is a possibility, but drowning oneself is a complicated task to accomplish, without some measure by which to restrain your arms and legs. Could he have taken something out of his duffel bag to aid this process? We simply don't know, but your body is going to kick into action and try to save you. Drowning is not comfortable. You're going to breathe water into your lungs, you're going to choke, and you're going to have that desperate need to escape. Now, were Bryce under the influence of something or suffering from a mental illness, these could all change his reaction. Police searched his vehicle when they stopped him and found no illicit substances in the car. He passed a field sobriety test. How could someone who seemed to be all right suddenly nosedive into a situation like this? If Bryce did not go into the lake, the one main problem I have with the suicide theory is the lack of a body. Suicide victims do not frequently go out of their way to conceal their remains, and in the nearly 5 years since Bryce vanished, his remains have never been located. Now, it's entirely possible he could have wandered off into the mountains, or that his remains have been discovered by animals, but considering the breadth of the searches that have been conducted in the area, it seems unlikely that even a shred of clothing wouldn't have been recovered by now. He chose this area for some reason or another, so why would he have gone there with the suicidal intentions and then elected to go elsewhere after crashing the car? It's yet another aspect of this mystery which remains to be determined. Suicide remains a possibility which can neither be ruled in or out, but in this particular case, it does seem a little less likely than other scenarios. The third theory in the disappearance of Bryce LaSpisa was put forth by the private investigator that was later hired by the family. According to her investigation, with all due examination given to the relationship between Bryce and his family, she firmly believes that Bryce, while sleep-deprived and disoriented, drove off the embankment accidentally and was subjected to a head injury which damaged his memory. Post-traumatic amnesia is described as a state of confusion that follows a traumatic brain injury. However, there are several things which would occur following a traumatic brain injury, and they don't all point to the possibility of retrograde amnesia. Amnesia has two classifications. Retrograde, meaning that the individual forgets all or some incidents leading up to the injury, and anterograde, meaning that the individual will not be able to store new memories from the time of the injury. For Bryce to have forgotten who he was, he'd had to have been subjected to retrograde. And while there are many instances of this lasting for long periods of time, most studies indicate that the victim will regain his or her memories within days. Based on the very limited amount of blood found in the SUV and the lack of blood in the area, it's difficult to imagine that Bryce sustained a severe enough head injury to have caused these problems. It is important to note, though, that concussions and traumatic brain injuries are not always associated with the necessity of an external injury which will result in blood spillage. There was also the possibility of a fugue state having taken place. A fugue state is a dissociative disorder characterized by reversible amnesia for personal identity, including memories, personality, and other character-defining traits. The state can last days, months, or even years. According to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, it can also involve unplanned travel and wandering. This certainly sounds like a possibility when we consider Bryce's travels in the days leading up to his disappearance, and ultimately, the disappearance itself. The causes of fugue states are varied, but can include severe stress and traumatic events, even including accidents or violent situations. So is it possible that Bryce entered a fugue state following the accident? Certainly, though it should be noted that fugue states are considered a rarity. If indeed this is what happened, it would go a long way towards explaining his disappearance, and possibly even his actions leading up to it, but what would have caused the fugue state to begin with? Drug and alcohol abuse has been shown, in some cases, to be a contributing factor to a fugue state. It's difficult to imagine that Bryce was in a fugue state leading up to his disappearance, though. He knew his girlfriend, he knew his roommate, and he addressed his parents as mom and dad when he spoke to them on the phone. They didn't notice anything in their conversations which would suggest that he had no idea who he was, let alone who they were. This would seem to indicate that if a fugue state occurred, it had to have occurred following the accident, which then calls into question all of his behaviors leading up to the accident. While I completely understand the interest in finding a psychological reason for whatever happened to Bryce, it's difficult to pin it down as amnesia or a fugue state when the details of the hours leading up to his disappearance are factored in. It could have been stress, drug use, or latent mental illness that led him to Castaic Lake, but the concept that he was suffering from something which led him there in the first place, and then he experienced a traumatic brain injury following the crash, which created a fugue state or amnesia, seems like a rather complicated set of circumstances in which a lot of rare and unlikely things would have had to have occurred. Bryce's disappearance is certainly bizarre and defies definition, but trying to put a finger down on one particular factor is nearly impossible. There simply is not enough information currently present which can explain his behavior leading up to the disappearance. For police, they believe that whatever led to Bryce telling his parents that they needed to have a talk likely contributed to his giving away items and vanishing. For them, the possibility of amnesia or a fugue state is slim to none. While these possibilities cannot be completely ruled out, they do seem to fall more into the category of rare or unlikely. If Bryce had simply crashed and then vanished without the strange behavior beforehand, these would seem much more possible. But given the events as they played out, it's difficult to latch on to one of these theories as more than speculative at best. The final theory in the disappearance of Bryce LaSpisa is that Bryce, following his accident, became the victim of an act of violence which may have resulted in his abduction or murder. The possibilities here are nearly endless, with everything from Bryce coming across a total stranger who may have had ill intentions, someone looking to rob him, the possibility of a drug debt or a vengeful person from his personal life, or some other incident which is yet to be considered. Police have long theorized about the possibility that Bryce may have hitched a ride with someone in the early morning hours, and this person may have taken him somewhere with bad intentions, or may have given him a ride somewhere where he met someone who was violent. In that rather empty area of California, there are a myriad of places that someone could have concealed a body or left Bryce, where he was unlikely to be discovered. The idea of Bryce getting a ride with someone and then later running into someone else who was violent seems unlikely. You'd imagine that if someone had given a kid fitting Bryce's description a ride at that time, he or she would have become aware of his disappearance and may have made a call. That isn't a guarantee, but it seems more likely than not. While it's purely speculative, it seems more likely that if Bryce became the victim of an abduction or homicide, it was likely conducted by the first person he came across that morning. Being that that area is so desolate, it's hard to imagine someone driving around looking for someone to attack. So there is a less likely possibility that this was a situation of someone who was out looking for trouble simply coming across Bryce, essentially, in the middle of nowhere. We can't rule out other factors, though. Someone may have seen Bryce and decided to rob him, although none of his items were taken from the vehicle. Or someone may have followed him and waited until he was somewhere where they might sneak up on him. All of these are possibilities, but again, I find myself returning to the accident scene. If Bryce's intention was not to disappear, if this was the result of a random act, then why would he have left his cell phone behind in the accident? Surely this could have been used to call for help, report the accident, check in with his parents. Also, why would he have left his wallet behind? We know he had a credit card, and leaving it in the vehicle severely limited his ability to get assistance, let alone food. He had previously called roadside assistance when he'd run out of gas. This seems like a much more likely situation for him to have made that call. Unless, of course, he knew his parents had tracked him through the previous call, and he didn't want to be tracked. Then again, we don't even know with 100% certainty that Bryce was the one driving the vehicle when it crashed. The possibility of a random act of violence can't be ruled out, but again, it seems unlikely. There are so many details which would need to fall into place for this to happen, and none of them go towards explaining Bryce's actions in the hours leading up to his disappearance, nor his choice to leave important items behind in the SUV. While I think a random act of violence is certainly a possibility, a full examination of the major theories in this case seems to put a majority of the weight away from a random act of violence and more in line with the possibility that whatever happened to Bryce was something he chose to do. Whether that choice was due to the influence of drugs, alcohol, head trauma, mental illness, or some combination of all remains to be determined. The disappearance of Bryce Laspisa is one of the most frustrating cases I've ever examined. All unsolved cases are rife with unanswered questions, but in this instance, the questions themselves are mysterious too. What happened to this young man to lead to his bizarre choices? What led him to Castaic Lake? What did he want to talk to his parents about, and why did he seem reluctant to call them? Why did he sit in Button Willow for nearly 13 hours? And why was he, seemingly, avoiding going home after giving away personal items and severing his relationship with his girlfriend? These are questions that both law enforcement and the Laspisa family would desperately like to have. But more so, they would like to find Bryce alive and well so that they might help him through this difficult time. It's been nearly 5 years since anyone verifiably laid their eyes on Bryce, and in that time, there have been numerous sightings, but nothing which has ever been proven true. This is one of the rare instances in which I truly think there's a possibility that the victim is still alive out there, and that he may yet be found and brought home. Sadly, without further information, a verified sighting, or some new discovery which might break this case open, the disappearance of Bryce Laspisa remains open, unsolved, and very cold. If you're interested in finding more information about the disappearance of Bryce Laspisa, there are several news articles and websites which address his case. The television series Disappeared did an episode covering his story, titled The Road to Nowhere. The Facebook page, Find Bryce Laspisa, is also a good source of information. If this case interested you, check out episodes done by Crime Junkie and California Dreaming, who have both touched on this case. If you have information about the disappearance of Bryce Laspisa, please contact the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department or the FBI. What do you believe happened to Bryce? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, or comment in the Facebook group. Before ending the show, I wanted to address the breaking news from today. There was a press conference this afternoon to announce the arrest of a man who has been matched through DNA and is believed to be the East Area Rapist, also known as the Golden State Killer, the original Night Stalker, and several other names. This is a tremendous day for law enforcement, for the true crime community, and for the victims and their families. While I'm not here to tell you not to celebrate, I would ask that you take a moment to think about the victims and their families. This is likely a day of mixed emotions for them, and while an arrest may close the wounds for some, it may open them for others. The road to healing is still a long walk. Much of the information is still being concealed, pending legal proceedings, and I'm sure in the coming weeks and months we will learn much more about what has happened. There will likely be books, movies, and television shows digging into this story. I'm simply glad that justice seems to have come for something so many thought would never be solved. It brings hope that all cold cases may someday receive their answers. If you'd like to support Trace Evidence, please visit the Patreon page located at patreon.com/traceevidence. If you'd like to support Trace Evidence and don't want to join Patreon or make a donation through PayPal, you can look good and support the show at the same time. Visit traceevidence.threadless.com or click on the merchandise link on trace-evidence.com and get yourself a t-shirt, tank top, or an item of home decor to help show your love for Trace Evidence. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Trace Evidence and invite you to check out our website at trace-evidence.com. You can find links to the Patreon, social media accounts, as well as places to go to download the podcast and subscribe. I'm always eager to hear your feedback. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a good rating on iTunes and leave us a review. This will greatly help our reach and bring more attention to the cases I cover. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.